wasn't sure I'd ever step out and do my own thing. It took this place to do it.
And it is Virginia Tech. This isn't some rinky-dink-ass program.
I don't know if I could follow that one up.
I'm yelling into the void, and that's what I like doing.
Pete, nobody's looking at your tweets.
We're going to recruit our footprint, and we're going to work our tails off to bring those Virginia kids to Blacksburg.
Those situations are the worst when you are on top of another guy.
The relationships are very important to me. That's what this place is built on.
That's your boy. That's your judge of character.
I'm going to end up in a Columbia prison.
That 95 Miami is my fondest memory. And maybe the experience after the Sugar Bowl with Wes Worsham and J.C. Price on Bourbon Street. Come on, J.C.
I want to know what you're drinking, Robbie.
It is roasty goodness, even though I was out.
What's the percent on that?
11.
It was a dream come true back then, and it's a dream come true today.
Hey, Mom, why don't you try a rail?
We're going to put this old guy in a grave.
For the love of the game.
And I mow the lawn after work before the podcast.
We just got better, guys.
Welcome to Too Deep, Hokies Under the Influence, a Sons of Saturday podcast. I'm your host, Pete B., and I've got my co-host here, Sam Jesse. Sam, how you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling pretty good. For a Monday night, I would say I'm doing pretty well. Might be coming down with a little cold, but we're going to power through.
No. Well, give us a cheers. Let's turn the tide on that cold, man. What you got for us?
I'm going to give a cheers to, first off, March Madness is in full swing. And if you haven't been paying attention to the conference tournaments, they've been amazing. I've seen at least 3 20-plus point comebacks in the past few nights. Shout out East Tennessee State. Shout out Lehigh.
March Madness.
Yeah, just incredible. Indiana State almost came back from down like 17.
Yeah, that was the one I was watching that one.
That was a great game. Both of those teams should be in the tournament. It's one of the best times of the sports calendar, I think, is the middle 2 weeks of March are just prime. So I guess cheers to being in a really good part of the sports calendar.
Cheers to that, man. In addition to all that basketball stuff we had going on, we had a lot of Virginia Tech versus Notre Dame action happening across multiple sports, the men, the women in basketball, and then even the baseball team. And they got a sweep, correct, Sam?
Yes, the first time Virginia Tech baseball has ever opened an ACC campaign with a 3-0 sweep.
Whoa. Yep. I was not aware of that. That is awesome. And you've been tweeting about your boy Renfro. He's the pitcher. He's in hammering the zone.
Brett Renfro is 4-0. I have up stats right here. So let me make sure I get this right.
Yeah, let's
right.
Hit the baseball thing real quick off the top before we get to women and men and football and all that good stuff.
Yeah, let's backtrack a little bit. Brett Renfro, true freshman starting pitcher from Manassas, Virginia. He has started 4 games for the Hokies, pitched 24 innings, has a 1.88 ERA, has 29 strikeouts to only 4 walks. Opponent batting average is a mere 179. And he has only allowed 5 earned runs in 4 outings. He is really, really good. He's challenging hitters with every at bat. He really does a good job of pitching. Everything that he pitches can be pitched for a strike. Some pitchers, they'll throw a slider, it'll go way outside. They'll have a 2-seamer as a secondary fastball, and it's always low. Everything he pitches can and will be a strike, and it's driving hitters crazy. Notre Dame came into the game averaging over 9 runs a game, really experienced lineup. They couldn't touch him. Charlotte is a very good hitting team. They couldn't touch him. So this guy's the real deal, and he's playing like a freshman All-American.
And I noticed, like, early in the year, we dropped a game to someone we shouldn't have. Now we're 11-3, and you mentioned that 3-0 in the ACCs. And then we can go back to baseball real quick, but the softball team, their record is outrageous right now. They're 18-3-1, and that one was that stupid Auburn thing that happened. And so they are killing it. They're ranked number 15 as of last week. The new rankings, I think, come out maybe tomorrow. But they just swept Louisville in their own right and are 6-0 in the ACC.
Mm-hmm. Louisville was a team who was picked in the top half of the ACC too, so that's a very good win on the road. But yeah, like you said, they have 3 losses. One of them is on the road to top 5 Georgia. And they also beat Georgia in that tournament as well. And then the other two happened back to back on the same day out in Phoenix, to Cal and to Grand Canyon. So pretty much outside of one day on a long West Coast trip and then against a top five team on the road, they've been pretty darn perfect. I'm not close enough to softball to say, oh, this is a super regional team. This is an Oklahoma City team. Like, I don't know if I can say that quite yet. The ACC is very good, not to the level that baseball is, but still very good. But I mean, this team looks like a wagon. I mean, they look good. Really good. And I think they have two or three different pitchers who can come in. So,
well, they definitely have really, Lemley, who we all know, but
definitely have Lemley. They're crushing.
It's also crazy. They've already played what, 22 games? Like, it's only March 11th and they've played 22 games already.
One of my good friends in undergrad was on the softball team and she would talk about their schedule is ridiculous. I mean, they are constantly going. There are no off days. Every travel day is basically doubles as doing all of your homework on the plane or on the bus.
And then it goes until after graduation, right? Like, it goes into May and June.
Yeah, the last scheduled game of the year for Virginia Tech is May 4th. So that's right before final exams.
And so by the time the regionals and College World Series is going on, you're getting into the end of May and whatnot. But
oh yeah,
great news out of the Diamond Sports. We can move on to the women's. I wanted to mention a few teasers before we get to our main topics here. Just that the women were knocked out of the ACC tournament in the semis, and Notre Dame went on to win the whole thing. So it makes you feel a little bit better that we lost to a team that was coming on strong at the right time and then ended up winning the conference. The men finished the season with a win, which was nice to see. We'll get to that. We got the ACC tournament coming up this week in Washington, D.C. And I also want to get to later in the pod, Sam, some of the football hype that's starting to build throughout the spring here with lists and reporters talking. So that's going to be fun. And I wanted to remind our listeners, when spring practice starts on Friday, March 15th, I'm going to be on location recording at Commonwealth Brewing Company in Fairfax, their new tap room in Fairfax. I'll be getting there around 5 o'clock or so, setting up, and we hit record at 6. ACC tournament semis start at 7 p.m. Ed should be in the building, barring Tech being in the semis, because I know he'll probably be at the game if we make it. But if not, regardless, we're going to be talking to the head brewer, Jeremy, and having some fun conversations about basketball and football and maybe some more Diamond Sport talk. Who knows? It'll be a good time. We might have Treadmill Horse sliding through. We might have Dan from Tales of the Terror Dome coming through. Robbie should be there at some point in the evening. So could be a lot of fun if you want to come and hang out with your boy here. And we're still working on Sam, seeing what his details are. And if he's under the weather, he's not going to show out anyway.
Well, I'll tell you, living down here and it's like Southeastern Virginia, you're pretty far from everything. Like, yes, you're kind of stuck down here. Richmond is about an hour and a half. That's fine. But everywhere else, man, is a trek. So,
here's the good news.
Oh, yeah, go on.
The good news is that we are not going to only do one of these live recordings. We will have more at different breweries, whether it's Richmond. I know Sam lives right near the Commonwealth in the 757. So,
yeah, about 20 minutes away.
Throughout 2024, we're hoping to do some more on location stuff. And so this is the start of it this upcoming Friday. So join us if you can. I wanted to talk wrestling before we go into the women's hoops details, just that we finished second in the ACC championships, but we did have two individual ACC champions. Makai Lewis does it again, his fourth straight, just incredible. Cause he did redshirt a year. So it's actually over 5 years. Cause I think it was his true freshman year. He won the Natty, but he also won the ACC title. Mm-hmm. And then you had Thomas Stewart also winning an ACC championship in his weight class. And that's a kind of a nice, almost like passing of the baton, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can't expect him to be a four-time ACC champion. That's a little bit lofty, but they have a program and they have really good younger wrestlers in there. But I know they want another national title with Makai Lewis. I'm not very close to wrestling, but I did hear that Penn State wrestler and Penn State who just wins the national title almost by default every year.
You're very good now. Yeah.
Yeah. The wrestler who It would basically be between him and Makai. That wrestler didn't make weight and is probably going to wrestle at a different weight class.
Oh, I got a little inside scoop from Sam here. I like
it. I saw it on the Twitter machine. So we'll see what happens with that. I don't know the rules about weigh-ins and like when those have to be. I don't know, but that's what I
said. We're not wrestling experts, but we are just rooting for our Hokies here. And we had, in addition to those two ACC champs, we had 7 total that are headed to nationals right now. Because Cooper Flynn is in, Sam Latona is in, Caleb Henson, who I think might have a shot to win it all because he kind of got upset in the ACC. Like he I think he's number 2 in this class or was. And then Connor Brady also made it, and Hunter Katka. And then Andonian, Crook, and Andy Smith, they have a chance at large bids, which I think they're awarding tomorrow, Tuesday. So we could have as many as 10 guys at nationals, but for right now we have 7 and 2 ACC champs in Makai and Stewart. And it's funny because Makai and Stewart both are New Jersey high school kids. I think Stewart is from VA, but ended up going to Blair Academy and coming back to VA for college. But yeah, a proud state of New Jersey that where I'm recording this podcast. Those are our 2 ACC champions at a New Jersey high schools.
All right, real quick, go Googling machine. Makai Lewis is currently ranked number 2 at the 174 weight class. Number 1, Carter Storace from Penn State. That is the wrestler who potentially will be wrestling maybe in the 184 weight class. So TBD.
Okay. All right. Let's move to women's hoops. ACC tournament. Liz was cheering the girls on. She was there. Standing, sitting. Something I remarked about on Twitter, that there was no crutches. There was probably a brace that we couldn't see under her sweats because she was limping a little bit, but I don't know if there was or not. But I just thought it was encouraging that she's there in good spirits and standing and clapping and all that other good stuff. I don't think it means that she's going to play in the NCAA tournament. I certainly hope that it does, but they're keeping mums the word on that right now.
I can't. I don't know. I don't have a great feeling about it. I'm far from a wrestling expert. I'm even further from an orthopedic doctor.
Right, but me too.
I would say that it doesn't look good, and it does seem like there has been some posturing from the stat from Kenny Brooks. Because if you look last year, Notre Dame had a player who had a very similar injury last regular season game, and they went from a 1 seed to a 4 seed. And if you're Virginia Tech and you're on that 2 seed line and then Kittley goes out, okay, well, if Notre Dame went down 3 spots, if Tech goes down 3 spots, they're not hosting. And so I think you definitely want to keep it like a possibility so that you at least get to host some games. And again, for those who don't know, the top 4 seeds in each region host the round of 64 and the round of 32 at their home gym, which would be amazing. Virginia Tech has not lost a home game this year.
Right. So if we can get at least a 4, we will have a path that would be much, much better for a Sweet 16 berth than a 5, you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously me and you were talking about earlier, I guess on the previous pod, just that we're hoping for a 3 seed. Could we stay at a 3? I think that is probably not going to happen. Bracketology has a set of 4, but let's go talk about the Miami game. We beat Miami in the ACC tournament, 55-47, ugly, ugly game. Neither team hit a shot, which I guess means our defense was good, or maybe Miami just couldn't hit a shot. I don't know.
Well, it's a little bit of both. Tech couldn't hit a shot. It was the worst they've shot all year. I believe at one point they were like 3 of 21 from 3. They looked kind of out of rhythm. And I think this team it's very obvious they're built around Kittley and they're built to play through her. And when she's gone, everyone seems a step out of rhythm, even Georgia Amore. And I think she even said this in the post game that she was like a little bit discombobulated to start that game. It took her a little bit to get going. And she definitely did. She scored like 20 some points. So it was her normal fabulous self. So
this 27 points on 19 shots, which is, that's a pretty good ratio. And she got to the line, which was important. Yeah. It's funny. She was 10 of 12 from the line. And the 2 that she missed were like right at the end where it's like, okay, George, put one of these in, let's get to like this, I think Ed was saying we got to get to that 8-point mark, and like she missed two that would have put us at the 8-point mark, but she ended up hitting the next two. And so she was 10 of 12 from the line, had a great night, and did get much more aggressive. Didn't she have the quote that she had to get her head out of her butt or whatever?
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to. I just don't think they know how to play without Liz Kitley yet. And granted, I mean, they haven't had to for years. So hopefully in this little break that they have a couple weeks, and figure stuff out, get people rested, have everybody ready to go. I thought Rose Michaud played, she did some good things. She's a hustle rebounder. Claire Shrack's obviously very talented, but has a ways to go in her growth. Hopefully these added minutes have helped her, helped accelerate that. He got hit shots.
That's one thing I was watching when you were, because we were all focused on Strock going into that game and Rose too, but more so Strock because she's the young up and coming stud and she got off to a good start. You know, she had 8 points in the first half and it was like, all right, maybe the gap that we're going down isn't as large as we thought. But then the second half rolled around. She struggled to score the ball, or they didn't get her the ball, or who knows what. And Georgia ended up taking over a little bit more too. But she's not quite, she's not quite Liz Kitley. She's just maybe not quite ready for this heavy of a burden, you know?
Yeah. And it looks, I mean, you're a Philly fan. It looks like if the Sixers don't have Embiid or if the Bucks don't have Antetokounmpo, it's a little weird for a bit. They'll get it back. But it's a little weird for a bit when there's a player that you play through so much, and hopefully they can. I think they have a lot of talented players. I think they've shot really poorly for the past few weeks, and those things ebb and flow. So hopefully you're at a valley and they can start to peak here as the tournament comes up. I think they definitely can. You know, Kayla King, Matilda Eck, Baker, all those girls are capable shooters, and I mean, nothing was falling in Greensboro.
No, absolutely, we were 34% for the game against Miami. And then let's go to the Notre Dame game because they looked much like the much stronger team by halftime. And then they just whipped us in the third. And we shot 30% from the field in that game. And that's got to be the lowest of the season. I didn't go back and click through everyone. I was hoping that someone in some article I read hooked me up with that stat, but 30% for the game has to be our worst or second worst of the season. And the fact that we lost by 29, which isn't very encouraging, but you know, throw it in the trash can. Kenny can figure, we have a long time before we have to play a tournament game. Kenny can figure some things out. What is a little alarming is what's going on with Matilda Eck. We saw her, she's got three straight offers. I tweeted out the screen grab with the what the eck thing, which I was just trying to address it in a lighthearted kind of way, but something is up and she could be dealing with something, a sickness, an injury. I don't know. Or maybe she's just struggling, you know?
Yeah. But these things happen, but you gotta, you know, if you want to hang banners, you gotta be really good in March. And I think last year we saw Virginia Tech play really, really well in March. They're playing their best ball. The polar opposite this year. And, you know, granted, injury has a major part to do with that, but it's not just without Kitley. I think it's the entire team seems to be in a collective funk, or I shouldn't say funk because that implies something mental. I would say they're just, you know, not shooting well right now. It happens in the game of basketball.
They have to change their entire scheme, as you said. Like everything needs to be changed.
They're running a totally different offense.
It's a chemistry thing at this point. And it sucks. What sucks so bad is that you mentioned playing their best basketball in March. Like we were playing amazing basketball throughout all of February and into the beginning of March for us, up until we played Notre Dame the first time. And it was a letdown spot, as we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
And then when Kitley goes down, everything gets thrown out the window. And it's so annoying because I felt like based on last year, Kenny had basically played it perfectly. Like get hot at the right time, get in sync at the right time. We had won 10 in a row or whatever it was. And now we're dealing with this. And it's just such a bummer. This week we dropped to number 13 in the AP poll, which is still pretty favorable. And if you go, what is that? By fours, you know, that would be a top four seed, right? And if you go to our to our net, I think we're number 19. So that would be a five seed if you go out to 20. Not that that's how it works. I'm just kind of giving people a framework here. But the bracketology put us at a four in South Carolina's region. Not awesome. Awesome. Although you're talking about Iowa looks incredible right now. They're number two. They just beat Nebraska in the Big Ten Championship, which was a crazy game that went to overtime. And Caitlin Clark's still ridiculous. But
her stats are great. And look, she is freaking amazing. But the amount of shots she takes in a game, I don't think I've ever seen it. It's beyond what Russell Westbrook was doing in the NBA for a bit. Let me pull it up.
The distance from which she shoots
is crazy. It's absolutely insane. Let me look it up here because it was so. Yeah, she was.
When I saw, go ahead.
She was 5 of 17 from three against Nebraska. That's 29%.
17 threes.
She shot 29% from three. She shot 29. She was 12 of 29. So 41% in totals is, you know, it's fine. But yeah, 17 threes. She shot 17 threes against Ohio State as well. She shot 18 threes in a game against Michigan. She shot 20 threes in a game against Michigan State. I mean, she made eight of them. But
we know what she can do when she's playing at her top. And this year, her percentage of points and assist for the Iowa team is higher than it was in every other year that she's played for them. She is the usage, the percentage of whatever that she's scoring and contributing to that team. She is carrying them. Now, some of the girls have stepped up throughout the year, but this isn't an Iowa podcast. It's just that they're playing really good basketball right now too. We saw LSU go down to South Carolina in the SEC championship, and the South Carolina will be without that one girl who pushed them. For a second there, we thought that both of those teams are going to be missing five players until the announcers corrected themselves.
ESPN ESPN wanted to kick everybody off the team first right there. Crazy, crazy.
But yeah, South Carolina ended up prevailing, another championship for Dawn Staley. Now they're undefeated. Last year they were undefeated. And so will they finish the deal this time? And so if we get stuck in a region with them without Kitley, that's going to be an almost impossible hill to climb, but we'll see what happens. I just want to host. I want to get those two home games. I want to get to the Sweet 16. If you can get to the Sweet 16 and you play a one seed LSU or a one seed Iowa, like, I don't know, maybe you could get an upset. Who knows?
I'll tell you, the last two games South Carolina played, they played a Tennessee team, and Tech, even without Kitley, I think is better than that Tennessee team. Tennessee had that game won the entire time until the very end. And then they, you know, struggled against LSU. They ended up winning that game, but Tech was at LSU and was in that game the whole time pretty much. So we'll see what happens. I think the recipe though is get nuclear hot from three. And that's basically your hope if you're going to make a tourney run here.
And maybe Kenny's having that conversation with Mike Young and just like, okay, we got to change our style a little bit and move more to like what Mike Young likes to do and driving
that
and dishing.
You did in Brooklyn that one year. How'd you do that?
Right. Exactly. Right.
Well, is that a good segue?
Yeah, that's a perfect segue because we want to talk about the men. We want to talk about how they could make a run because we saw it happen a couple years ago. And yes, that was by and large an outlier, but it's the same coach and we still got some of those same players. And so let's see what they can do when they play in DC, which is, hey, that's our home area. That's where we got so many of our Hokies. When we play on Wednesday, I assume we'll have a nice crowd in the stands. And we beat Notre Dame on Senior Day. So we really stuck it to the Irish. Other than the women, we swept them in baseball, and the men avenged their loss from a couple weeks back against the Irish. And that was kind of a weird first half, too, because we had a lead and then lost it, and then Sean kind of went crazy there for a little bit. He was really attacking.
Yeah, I think Virginia Tech has a rim protection problem as a team, except for Malajuel Poti. He's very good in that area. And I think you saw some of their defensive deficiencies in that area, but then you also saw what they could do offensively. And I understand the level of competition the last few weeks hasn't been great. You have a bubble team in Wake Forest. a dumpster fire of a program in Louisville, and then a not very good and a very young Notre Dame team. But the offense has looked really fluid. It's looked really good. And that was even without one kid against Notre Dame. So you do feel like, although the level of competition is what it is, and, you know, yeah, you if you win, you got to play North Carolina the next game, which I think is a horribly unfortunate draw for Virginia Tech. But, you know, you're peaking at the right time. And even if this doesn't end in an ACC title, you're kind of a lock for the NIT and you're still feeling good.
Yeah, and listen, North Carolina's been good. And when we played at the Dean Dome earlier this year, that was not going to be a win. We know that. But in a neutral setting in D.C., if we can get there, and I want to talk about Florida State in a second, I think that this we've talked about the ceiling of this team. We beat Iowa State, you know? That's a very, very good team. And North Carolina may be better than them or what, and North Carolina's coming off that Duke win, but let's address that in a second. In the Notre Dame game, with Sean getting those 28 points, I'm hoping he can keep some of that hot streak going into what we're going to about to get into. Now, he was 0 of 5 from 3, but to get 28 points without hitting a 3 is kind of outrageous for a college basketball game. MJ and Nickel both added 15 points.
I'm looking up his stats now, and, you know, it is pretty incredible how much he's cleaned up his game. You know, we're not seeing the turnovers. We're not seeing the wild plays. But
very
he's
few turnovers.
Yeah, and it's like this is the Sean Padula that Tech that we thought we were going to get this year and that Virginia Tech really needs. And I'll tell you, this team is so much better than what they've played this year. Even with Makai Long not being available, and, you know, Lynn Kidd, we'll see if he's available against Florida State. Even without that, like Tyler Nickel, Hunter Couture, Sean Padula, MJ Collins is finally playing up to his potential as an athlete. Like, they're so much better than what they played this year. And credit to Mike Young for keeping the guys engaged, because I think there was a point in time there, early February, mid-February, where it looked like everyone had kind of, you know, moved on to spring break. Not the case now. They look locked in. They looked ready to go. There are definitely some deficiencies, but yeah, like you said, like Sean Padula is the kind of player who can get nuclear hot in a game, and they're going to need that against Florida State. They're going to need to get UNC.
Yeah, because he had those stretches. I mean, he had a couple 30-point games. And I totally agree with what you said about Mike Young, because this team, it does not have a star. Padula is probably our best player, but it's a lot of guys who aren't elite at their positions or, you know, in their conference or whatever, and they're just managing to play a pretty good team game. Even guys like Robbie Beeren, like I continue to watch him and be a little impressed with his defense and him getting in there. Certain games he puts up 10 points or whatever.
Yeah, you know, he can shoot the ball and he can spread you out. And against a team like UNC, that would be a key. There are moments where you're like, gosh, this guy, how can you even play him in the ACC? Like, he's so slow. He's not even protecting the rim. He's not doing that. And then the next moment, he'll block a shot, grab his own rebound, push the ball up the court, nail a three. And you're like, what? Who was that guy? Where'd he come from? So,
and there's a little bit of that to all the guys, right? Like, we see it from Padula, we see it from MJ, we see it from Tyler, like we see it from all of them. And so that's the thing, is like, can we just get all of you syncing up and playing at your best? Because when we play Florida State, we're the 8 seed, they're the 9 seed, we're number 54 in KenPom, Florida State is number 81, and they have just one game over 500 for the regular season because they had such a bad out of conference, Florida State did, before starting to play well in conference, and we both finished 10-10. The game's at noon on Wednesday. And while they did beat Miami to finish their year, Miami just went in the tank, they won only 4 of their last 12 games. So they haven't been – they had, like, bad in the beginning of the season, a nice stretch, and then they kind of struggled down the stretch. And so it's a very beatable team if you're just looking on paper. Jameer Watkins, Darren Green, and Primo Spears, they all average double figures – for the Seminoles. Green is their 3-point guy. And Watkins is okay from distance, but that's about it on the perimeter. Like, they do not shoot the three well. That should be an advantage for us. And they have some size. And Florida State has always had size.
Always.
But it's not at their typical level.
And Tech probably should have won that game in Tallahassee. I know there was the questionable foul call at the end and, you know, whatever. I think just throughout that game, Tech was the better team for 40 minutes in that game. And I really do feel like, again, it sucks. It absolutely sucks that I would have rather them had the 10 seed and not have to go up against and play the extra game, to be honest with you, because I look at that bottom half of the bracket and I see UVA down there. I see a young Duke team. I'm like, that's a lot better than having to play Carolina, who is by far the best team in the conference.
Let me swing it. Let's just do a spin here, Sam. We get the win against Florida State. Okay. We move on to UNC. We slay that dragon. And would you rather go up against UNC after one game or after having played two games? Like, you see what I'm saying? Especially with our bench potentially being short. Like, if you're going to beat the best team in the tournament, which you probably are going to have to do at some point or another, if you're going to win, and that's what we're talking about here, because that's the only way we're getting the NCAA tournament, probably. You want to do it after playing one game rather than two. That's why that double bye is such a big advantage, because by the time any of these teams that had to play day one or two would get there, they're so tired, which makes our run that we did before all the more impressive.
Yeah. I would say UNC is the type of team that you just don't want to play them at all if you're Virginia Tech, because they do things that Virginia Tech can't defend very well. Virginia Tech isn't good against dribble drive, and they have RJ Davis. Virginia
ACC
Tech,
player of the year.
Yeah, they aren't great against a dominant rebounder and a dominant rim protector. They still have Armando Bacot, you know, and that's a team too. They have tons of other players. Like, it would be very Virginia Tech to play UNC and Cormac Ryan to drop 40. Like, it's the most predictable Virginia Tech basketball thing of all time. And it's because they're a very good team. Now, I think UNC is also saying it would be very predictable for us to play Virginia Tech and Hunter Couture drop 40. So that's the flip side.
And we need that. Hunter Couture, he just went on with the Suns with Billy and Pat and did an interview. So you guys should check
Great
that
interview.
Out. One of his final, probably his final interview of his career as a Hokie with the Suns of Saturday. But we saw him in the tournament go nuts in the champion. Mm-hmm. That was the championship game when he dropped 30 plus.
30 and dropped 32, but he dropped 32 on like not that on like 15 shots or something.
Oh, he was unbelievable that night, man. That's what we need. We need that Hunter, because Hunter's been so impressive over his career because of the consistency. His sophomore year, he was like 43% from three. And then the next 3 years, he was above 40 every year, 41, 42, whatever. And this year, it's kind of like he's such a good shooter. It's never gotten to the 45 or 46 mark, but like, he's just so consistent. And if you go through the best three-point shooters of all time in college basketball, like, he's in the top 150. Since the institution of the three-point line, he's in the top 150. And so that's how good he is. But we need him to not just be consistent. We need him to get hot if we're gonna go a couple rounds. And hey, do you think, and this is a good question actually, if we beat Florida State and we play UNC and we're able to win that game, is there any chance we're like in the last four in if we beat UNC?
I don't think so. And let me pull up. We're so not in that conversation right now that
we were on that last line before the weekend, right? Like,
I think Lenardi kind of trolled. I think he kind of trolls, to be honest with you.
Lenardi,
And I don't mean that to demean the team. I think they've had honestly, outside of two or three games, they've had a pretty good season. They just haven't had the big game opportunities.
The Miami games loom large, don't they?
And I look at the teams, like, look at who he has last four in right now. Indiana State is in that last four in, and metrics wise across the board, they're above Tech.
We got to get them in there. got to get Indiana State in there.
Virginia, one, is a basketball brand. Two, you know, they split with Virginia Tech. Tech beat them by a bunch, but they split that 1-1. Then you have Colorado and St. John's. If you go to the next four out, so this is not the first four out, but the next four out, you have Wake Forest, Virginia Tech split with them. And then you have Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh beat Virginia Tech. So on a head-to-head basis.
Wake and Pitt in the next four out?
In the next four out. Dang. He has 17-14 Villanova in the first four out.
He hates the ACC. He's hated the ACC all year. And like he's done this for a long time, so maybe we should defer to him. But I'm wondering what the committee's going to do with the ACC.
Yeah, I don't know. But there's a lot of teams that Virginia Tech would have to jump.
Yeah.
And I just don't see it happening.
We need a miracle. Yeah. We need to
win the tournament. If they don't win the tournament, I don't think they get in. And if you,
that's like, the right way to think about it. I'm just doing hopeful brain here. All right. Well, do you have any final points to make on the basketball team? I know a couple people that are going on Wednesday. It's a noon start, which I'm going to be taking my lunch break and watching that game. But that's
my plan.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can pull one off, have some fun before any postseason. But even if it's the NIT, it'd be nice to win a game in the ACC tournament.
I will say that I think this is going to be a very interesting and eventful. And I would say maybe even surprising in some ways off season for Virginia Tech basketball, because regardless of what happens, they have a lot of players to shuffle in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to lose some guys in the transfer portal, just like every team in the country will. But I think it's going to be a very attractive portal destination as well. And they do have a couple really good recruits coming in. I think it's going to be an interesting offseason for Virginia Tech.
And we got to see, this is a bigger conversation, and maybe something I'll talk about with Ed on Friday, is just like, will we see a different type of commitment financially to the basketball mm-hmm. program as we move forward here, based on we're not far away, right? Like we're just like a player or two away from being a consistent tournament team every year. And a little bit of financial commitment could go a long way, but that's mm-hmm. a bigger conversation. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a moment to talk about our sponsor and take a beer break. The 2 Deep Hoagies Under the Influence podcast is brought to you by Roback. You guys know Roback. It's the performance activewear designed for those who crave activity. They've got the Commonwealth restocked. It's a beautiful polo. You know it. You've seen it on many people. If you've been down in Blacksburg in the last year or so, or even in Northern Virginia, it's the white polo with the tiny maroon Virginias. That's back. They're giving our listeners 20% off their first order using code 2DeepVT. You can also grab a hoodie or a quarter zip. They have that beautiful maroon quarter zip as well. The joggers, their shorts, and of course, all the various polos of different designs. And they're going to be getting some really interesting stuff as time goes on here. And we're going to have more and more promotions going on with Roback. But for now, if you want to grab that polo before golf season gets going, I would recommend it. Go to their site, load up your cart, and use code 2DeepVT for 20% off your order. Roback Crave Activity. Right now, Sam, I need to know what you are drinking.
So I said I wasn't going to do this quite yet, but I am repeating a beer that I had a few weeks ago. It's the Orange Crush IPA. It is
Back Bay. Is that Back Bay Brewing?
It's Back Bay Brewing. It is, if you didn't hear that episode, it is a... It has the orangish flavor without being a really fruity beer. If you don't know, there's a cocktail in this that's popular in this area. That's an Orange Crush, and it's served in a bucket. It tastes like sherbet ice cream, kind of. It's very delicious in the summer.
Well, you got to know, the Arlington people know Dewey Beach, and Dewey Beach is famous for the Orange Crush. People always say it's the Starboard's drink. Well, the Starboard got it from the Lighthouse, and the Lighthouse was the original, and then it moved over to the Rudder, and it made its way down to the Starboard, and the Starboard, it sells them by the boatload. But Orange Crush, delicious drink up and down the East Coast. Go on. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, and it's the beer tastes like that, right? It's more of the sherbet flavor. It's not as much of like citrusy mango flavor. It's good. It's not the best beer I've ever had by any means, but if you like the bitterness and you like more of an IPA and it's a little warmer outside, or you're just feeling for a little bit lighter of an IPA, it's a great bet. And Back Bay has a lot of good beers. I'll have some more as we move along.
Nice. I like it, man. I am drinking the three-notched history in the making juicy IPA. And this was a collaboration that Three Notch did. You can see the colors. That's Sam Adams on that can. Very kind of an interesting collab to get an old school, what do you call that? Like a not big batch brewer, but they, you know, one of the big boys and, mm-hmm. and a three notched, which I know is coming up a lot, but you would still consider it a craft brewery, not like a major American brewery. But this history in the making collaboration between them, it's awesome. Very, very good beer. It actually has kind of a darker color as compared to a lot of the hazies that come out. It's not that almost OJ looking color. It's closer mm-hmm. to a copper, but it's really good. And Sam Adams, they redid their Boston Lager last year. They put out a new recipe because I think Robbie and I had talked about the fact that their flavor profile had been passed by as years have gone on, and all these craft breweries making more modern beer had moved along and passed them up. And so they revamped the Boston Lager, and I still have yet to actually have the new recipe, but that's besides the point. They struggled to make an IPA for a long time. Sam Adams did. And even now, I don't think I'm reaching for their IPAs so much. They came out with the Sam 76, which I think was technically a pale, and they've turned that into the Wicked Easy. And then they also have the Wicked Hazy, which is actually a very good beer. Like I do like the Sam Adams Wicked Hazy beer, but it took them, you know, 10 years into the IPA phenomenon to come out with that. And so they're catching up and they're doing things like this, which I think is a step in the right direction, working with cool breweries like Three Notched that make awesome beer. And so I do like this one. This collab it's a cool idea, and cheers to that. I like it.
Cheers.
All right, let's move to football. Oh, let me get a sip in here. You can see the graphic on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. We got some spring hype going on. And so this graphic is entitled the VT Football Spring Hype Train. Got a picture of Kirk Herbstreit holding an ice cold Coors Light going on the beer theme. And that train is moving, man. Mm-hmm. The mountains are blue and the Hokies are hot. we got Kyren Drones listed as number 8 in Tom Fornelli's QB power ranking. I think we might have mentioned that on our last show. Correct me if I'm wrong. And you can see right under him is a very famous college quarterback in Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah. A football lifetimer, Dylan Gabriel. I'd tell you, I don't remember this amount of hype in my adult life, certainly for Virginia Tech football in the offseason. And from what I've heard from most people and what I remember, it's more than they had during the Tyrod years as well. And I think social media has a large part to do with that. Like, we didn't have this is list season. And I think that's a very new phenomenon in college football. So, but man, I'll tell you, it's not only is it hype for Virginia Tech, but it's hype from respected analysts, Tom Fornelli definitely being one of them. And Kyren Jones is leading that. Right? He's currently spending his spring break in Miami with Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, doing some workouts on the beach in the indoor practice facility at Miami, just enjoying life, talking some trash. It's been very entertaining to listen to them. It would be a good like reality TV show on MTV, like college quarterback house for spring break.
I would watch the hell out of that show. But yeah. Do you remember back like when Logan Thomas was coming up, when you went to the Manning Passing Academy, mm-hmm. it kind of meant you were in that cool up and coming QB club. Now it's going on spring break with Shedeur Sanders. That's them, and that's what Drones is doing. And if you're putting yourself in that company, Shedeur, for all the stuff about Coach Prime, like he's an awesome quarterback, really, really good quarterback. And Cam Ward has, well, maybe not the best year ever, very good quarterback. He's going to be playing for the Miami Hurricanes. And it's going to be cool when we go up against them to see like these guys who are on spring break together, like go at each other on the field. But you can see Drones starting to ascend. Like we've seen it in these lists We've seen it in videos. We've seen it, like, there's been so much talk about him as a dark horse Heisman candidate and things like that. And it may, I hope, and he seems like the kind of guy, based on his field presence, based on talking to his father a little bit, that he's not reading his press clippings. He's a calm, cool, collected kind of guy. He's not one of those people that's going to just think all of a sudden, you know, I don't have to work for anything because I've reached the mountaintop with these off-season lists. Like, he is the kind of guy that's going to keep working. And we've seen that in the winter workouts already.
Yeah, he definitely seems like a guy who enjoys the work too. He's always smiling in these videos. Like, first off, physically, he is a tank. I mean, the dude is, and you see in some of these videos, he doesn't look like a quarterback. He looks like a linebacker. But I'm just so excited to see a quarterback that really looks like they're ready to take the next step in their development. And I think going back, Pete, to last offseason, we heard from reputable sources who were at practices, Grant Wells is head and shoulders above Kyren Drones. You know, people who didn't have an agenda, people who just wanted what was best for the team, they said, look, Grant Wells is far and away better than Kyren Drones. And all of a sudden, 2 or 3 weeks into the season, that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. And now he's continuing to get better. And what it sounds like more to me is it's not a conspiracy that people wanted Grant Wells to start. It's not people favoring someone over someone else. It's that Kyren Drones is just getting that much better, that much quicker. Mm-hmm. And if you're seeing that development, and if that trajectory continues and the offensive line gets better and the receivers stay there, and the running backs stay there, like, oh my goodness, man. Like, this could be the best Tech offense since, I don't know, 2000.
And
we haven't had a lot of asterisks. Virginia Tech hasn't had a lot of good offenses.
No, we have. And it's there. Because one of our, one of the years that we probably hated the most, 2018, was one of our best offenses. 2020, if you look at the numbers from 2020, outstanding offense. 2016 with Gerard was an outstanding offense on a
jet sweep and out route them to death.
Yes.
13 games.
So we've had some higher ones, but you are, the history tells you that no, we haven't. I mean, the leader in passing touchdowns for a season for Virginia Tech, I think it's, is it like 24 or something like that? It's not 30. It's not a crazy amount. I thought it was Tyrod. And then I can't remember if Hooker or somebody else passed him, but
Gerard might have. Gerard, I think, has like total touchdowns or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Cause he did have several running, but you mentioned the thing about Grant Wells being ahead of him last year in practice. And something that Robbie and I've talked about, like, and Pry just mentioned this on the TSL interview that he did, was that the things that Kyren is best at, playing on the move, running the football, getting his nose dirty, like right up in there, plowing a guy over, you can't practice that. Like, you can't practice a lot of the things that he does because, you know, quarterbacks aren't live and whatnot. So that is a major reason why he ended up being better. Cause all the things that he's good at are really kind of hard to show in practice, or harder to show in practice.
Yeah. We talk about the looks good in shorts quarterbacks a lot of times, like guys who look really good training in the off season, guys who can throw around, like Zach Wilson, famously
Joe Milton,
he
just proved it again.
Like, some guys are just gamers. Like, some guys just get out there and look at Kyren's. One of the rare guys who's both. He looks good in those drills. I mean, if you watch his videos on Instagram, he has incredible zip on the ball. But then he gets out in the game and he has that gamer aspect to him as well. Not very much a rah-rah type quarterback, but I mean, he's going to fight for every yard. I'm really excited for this season, but there's another graphic on there that I think is maybe more important in terms of overall team improvement.
That's right. It was the top 10 returning defensive tackles for the 2024 season. And this was a PFF graphic. And number 9 in this top 10 is Aeneas Peebles, the transfer that came in from Duke. And he didn't play a full smattering of snaps, but he played a lot. And Duke was a pretty good team for most of the year. And like the only ACC guy ahead of him on this list is Peter Woods. Now, Peter Woods plays for Clemson, and he was one of their stud recruits that they were comparing to some of the great defensive tackles they've had, and the Dexter Lawrences and the Christian Wilkins and whatever else. But if you look at the stats of what Aeneas Peebles put up and what Peter Woods put up, like, it's not particularly close. More tackles, more sacks, more passes defended is everything that Aeneas Peebles did. Now, I know if this is a PFF list, it's probably based in advanced analytics and a per-play kind of thing. But what I'm trying to say is that he could be the best returning defensive tackle in the ACC. Peebles.
He very well could. And I think it's also exciting the players that they have around him at that position, bringing in Kamari Copeland from JUCO, bringing in, I mean, it's like the whole defensive line upgraded. And we were really worried about that in the offseason. We were like, shoot, they're losing a lot of guys. They're losing Mario Kendricks. They're losing, Norah Pollard.
And we kept Fuga.
Replace him. You know, you got Fuga coming back. You have Wilfred Penei coming back. Like, you're going to have depth of that position, and that's a position that you need depth in because they're going to be rotating every single drive. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Tech not only has some of these higher ranked guys, but also looks to have depth at that position is really, really key because it killed them last year. I mean, if Tech had two more decent defensive tackles last year, they might win two more games. Yeah, that's how important that position can be. So really excited.
And you didn't mention Gunnar Givens for defensive tackle.
Who?
That's right. One of our top recruits from a couple years ago, Gunnar Givens, still hasn't moved to offensive line. So we're going to see if he can contribute a little bit of the defensive tackle this year too. That was just a little joke, but I think if you follow the program closely, you know that we're waiting to hear some more about that stud recruit from Prize.
Would be nice.
We talked a little bit about, you know, the quarterback and the defensive tackles now. But if you just look at our offense, and that's what you were talking about with how good could this offense be? Because you have the same offensive coordinator. You have the same offensive analyst in Brent Davis. That's still going to be around. And when was the last time, and you mentioned this, but we actually need to do some hard data diving on this over the next couple months. The best, our best leading QB, running back, wide receiver, coming back for the same, back for another year, like keeping the leader of those three positions.
I don't know
when we did that. I really don't know. And if we did, like, when did that quarterback like play five or more games in the following season? You know,
yeah,
like
that, I was gonna say 2018, maybe
potentially 2018, because we had Josh, we had Hazleton, and I guess McLeese or Peoples, right? Like, they would have been our leader.
Was McMillan 17?
I think he might have been gone by 17.
I get his career was a wild one.
I'm not sure.
But yeah,
either way, I don't think he was there for 18.
I'll tell you what, they haven't brought back guys with the stats, even if they were the team leaders, because if you look at Virginia Tech's, what they're bringing back, we aren't talking about Ollie Jennings coming back. And I almost forget half the time that he's coming back as well. And like, he was wide receiver one for that ODU game. And there was no question about it. And it's not like they would have just thrown anyone out there to be wide receiver one. Like, he was the clear number one target. And he goes down at the very beginning of game number two. Now, granted, I think that allowed you to see a little bit more of Jalen Lane as the season went on. And what allowed you to see Felton on some of those deep balls as well. But like, I don't think there's ever been, maybe 2000, but outside of that, I don't know if there's been a year that Virginia Tech has brought back this much offensive returning production and high level production as well.
And let's move past production to the offensive line, because they're like, who did we lose on the offensive line? You know, I know it wasn't our strongest position.
It got better throughout the season.
It got throughout the year. But they're coming back too, by and large, every single guy. Plus, we added Montavious Cunningham. And then if you wanted to take the QB, running back, and wide receiver step further from the skill positions, all the tight ends are back too, because Nick Gallo decided to come back. Daquan Wright did leave. I'll caveat, because he was our leading tight end, so we did lose our leading tight end. But getting Gallo back from a blocking standpoint, in addition to that offensive line, having the same offensive line coach coming into this season, there's so much potential here, and it's very exciting. And that's why we're pumped for spring practice to get going on the 15th. I'm dying for some more nuggets to come out about the guys and position changes and who's progressing and the weight room and all that stuff.
We're a little bit early, but like if Kyren Drones goes out there and throws one pass and then goes and sits on the sidelines, would you be okay with it? Because I think I'd be totally okay with it.
In the spring game?
Yep.
Yeah. I would be. I would want to see him throw a couple of slants and a couple of maybe one deep ball and then a couple out patterns, because I do think that he's got that zip that you talked about to get the ball to the sideline. And we saw it a bunch last year. That might have been some of his best throws were some of those like 15-yard zippers to the outside. I would want to see him maybe throw a deep ball and complete a deep ball, and then he could sit. Like, that's all I really want to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a really fun spring, hoping for good health for everybody. But I mean, this is the best I've felt about Tech football in quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's an exciting time of year. We got the Diamond Sports in full swing. Basketball, we're going to see what the ladies can do. And hopefully they can pull, let me get this off the screen. Hopefully they can pull that home court advantage for the first two rounds, because if we do have to go up against a Utah or somebody like that as a 5 seed, you want that to be in Blacksburg for sure. You don't want to be on the other end of that one, but really fun time of year for Virginia Tech. And if it wasn't for the Kittley injury, we'd all be freaking on cloud nine right now, awaiting our seed and to see what's about to happen, hoping for a natty.
Yeah, it sucks. Can I pulled something up that I want to talk about back to the offensive line real quick. One of the issues with Virginia Tech at the beginning of the season was blown assignments. They didn't know where to go. Guys running in the backfield. But then as the season went on, that kind of went away, and you started to see Virginia Tech's offense look really, really good. They finished the season with only 9% of designed rushes with a blown blocking assignment. Virginia Tech finished the season at 9%. That is, and with a lower percentage being good. That's 31st in the country. So
yeah, that's amazing, dude.
Yeah.
Like, so because it was so bad
for four while. Games looked like, I mean, that's terrible. Week one opponent Vanderbilt, 16% of their runs had a blown blocking assignment, 124th.
Piss and Pavia in for a rude awakening?
I don't hit him too hard. He's so short, but he's so much fun.
APR is coming off that edge. He's going to take him down.
I think it's going to be a really tough season for Diego Pavia, but I'm happy that more people will get to watch how much of a gamer he is. He's a tough guy. You're not gonna knock him out. He's a tough cookie. He's got that Michael Brewer in him. Like, you're going to have to literally break
his collarbone for him. That's a very good comparison. So you're saying we're going to break his collarbone, is what you're saying.
Don't break Diego Pavia's collarbone. I love seeing him play. He's so much fun.
I feel like Vanderbilt's problem last year wasn't the quarterback or wide receivers necessarily. It was like everything else.
They have a lot of it. Clark Lee, that's a really interesting case, because he came in with like a lot of accolades from Notre Dame, felt like the guy, and he's a defensive guy, and their defense has been terrible since he got there. Absolutely terrible. So, that's a long ways away, Pete, though.
We got a little bit of Vanderbilt preview here
a midweek baseball game against Marist coming up. I can't be worried about a football game now, okay?
I noticed that Marist game, it's like a one-off. Right in the middle of the week. It's strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at the beginning of the season, especially, they'll play non-conference one-off games in the middle of the week. And those can be a blessing and a curse. A blessing because you can kind of get they can be very tough to win because you won't have one of your starting pitchers starting. And who knows what can happen in those games. Like Wake Forest, top 5 team in the country, lost to UNC Greensboro a few weeks ago. So you got to win the game, but I got a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. But
I don't understand how that works.
With the way college baseball RPI works, even if you beat a bad team 15-0, your RPI can go down simply because your strength of schedule goes down. So if there is even a hint of rain, if John Chef wakes up in the morning and there's a cloud in the sky, they might cancel that game. Just saying. And it happens across college baseball. It's because of the way the selection process for the tournament works. But yeah, we'll see.
There you go. Little inside baseball, literally. Well, that's going to do it for this show. One thing I forgot to mention this up front, but we are doing our tournament, the Best Win Since 2000 tournament. It is online. There's been lots of posts today. All the polls are on the @2deep VT Twitter feed, X feed. You can find them there and vote. Today, there was a couple upsets brewing in the bracket. And I think 2015 UVA might pull through and get through to the second round. And then the Clemson 2007 versus 2016 Notre Dame. That was a slobber knocker. I thought it was going to be. And Clemson, I think, is pulling it out. But there was one more. UNC 2021. That was that ended up really taking a hefty lead against 2018 FSU.
Yeah, and I was standing on a table for 2018 FSU the whole time, but I ended up voting for the UNC game. And the reason I came down to was, outside of Virginia Tech fans and Florida State fans, I understand it was a nationally televised game, but it is somewhat like people are going to forget that game. Look at that. You got a different graphic and everything. So many college football fans are going to remember that UNC game for a long time. There's because of what it meant to college football in the scenes from it, in the videos shot in the Motorola Razr.
Yep.
And you know that it was a close game for so long. So for me, thinking about all that, like that UNC 2021 game, I think if we were to redo our seeding again and talk through it again, that might have ended up being like a 3 seed if somebody else came in.
The seeding episode was so hard because you're trying to have so many conversations in such a short period of time that you can't sift through all the minutia of like, did we get this right by 1 seed? But that's why the voting is good. And if UNC wins and it'll likely win, I think that's the right choice. I honestly agree with you that maybe in a reseeding, it would have been higher. Al Jones said this on the Sons of Saturday, one of the threads we're on, saying like, which game from the 2018 FSU and 2021 USC did we tell more lies about the rest of the season from? And that was hands down FSU.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the 21 UNC game, I remember walking back to the Airbnb that all the Sons of Saturday guys had. We were like, oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. We played awful. How did we win that game? That was terrible. We should have won that game by 4 touchdowns. What in the world? So you could kind of see like the issues in that game, even though Tech ended up winning the game. That Florida State game, I was ready to, we're going to the playoffs. Josh Jackson was an All-American. Our defense wasn't going to let up a touchdown. Like,
and we, you know why that was? Is we had more, there was more faith in Fuente because we had just come off 10 wins, 9 wins, and then we win game one in year 3 against a Florida State team. And it's like, all right, trajectory's going up. We're all good. So, of course, and then by 2021, we kind of knew who Fuente was. Like, a lot of us wanted him gone after the 2020 season.
Well, we also knew who UNC was by the 2021 season.
Very fair. Very fair.
So, we knew that was overhyped.
We didn't know that Willie Taggart was overhyped at the time.
We did not know that yet. Did not know that.
Anyway. All right. We got sidetracked there, but yes, make sure you're voting at 2DeepVT on Twitter. That's another thing we got going on this week before our live recording on Friday. So it'll be a fun week. And I did just see on Twitter that the Sons of Saturday boys, Billy and Pat, will be interviewing Coach Pry. Huge interview. Awesome interview. Have they ever interviewed him before?
Yes.
They did? Okay.
Yep, did last
year. I wasn't sure if they – I know they had Fuente on. I don't know if they had – I didn't remember if they had Pry on.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. I think this is one of the things that Pry is best at, is communicating in these kind of ad hoc scenarios, I think is something that he's so good at. And I'm really interested to hear – I hear them pick his brain about last season.
And they got to ask him some good questions, man. We got to get some questions in there.
I want quotes from meeting rooms after the Marshall game. I want to know everything. I'm really excited for it because
me too. And Billy is both of those guys do a really good job with interview questions. I feel like over the years they've both gotten they're so personable that if they can lure Pry into a very comfortable setting, he may be willing to dish a little bit more than maybe he would with a Will Stewart or an Andy Bitter or somebody like that.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what he has to say about last season, but maybe even more so now that I'm thinking about it, I'm excited to hear what he thinks about the bigger college football picture. And we'll have podcasts about that as the offseason drags along. But
dude, I almost brought up the CFP stuff with what they're trying to get for the Big Ten. We can't talk about it now, but
I got to have at least depressed. Two or three therapy sessions before I get on there and talk about that.
That was so upsetting, but that's besides the point. But yes, look for the Pry interview from the boys. Look for the Hunter Couture interview. It's already out. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be back later in the week. But for now, that's going to do it. And go Hokies.
Go Hokies.